Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to the Peristyle Podcast on a Wednesday. I'm trying to think of what day it is. It's the day before New Year's Eve. It's actually Wednesday night. Keely Yore and myself are recording this podcast. Hope you guys enjoyed your holiday. We got another one coming up with New Year's, of course. But we wanted to get in a show to answer some of the questions and talk about some of the news around the USC Trojan football team. There have been some defections, guys going to the NFL, some players entering the transfer portal. So we'll break that down and then answer all of your questions. And you got a lot of them. If you have questions for us, podcast@uscfootball.com is the email address, or if you can call or text us at 424-254-9141 is the number. Send us a text, leave us a voicemail. We got a couple of voicemails. We got some texts. We got some voicemails that were a little too long to play, so I'll try to summarize those. And if you have Apple Podcasting, the app, on any of your devices, you can leave us a 5-star rating. A positive review is always awesome with any comments, feedback, suggestions. Plus, you can subscribe to the podcast, Peristyle Podcast, on there. Keely Yore usually reads things down. I don't think we have any new ones this week, but I finally got an iPhone, Keely. I can now use the Apple Podcasting app myself.
How exciting. Now you can put yourself on the spot and have to read some of the reviews. So there you go. Exciting. Yeah.
You can pull them up on the web, so I do that sometimes, but just having it, you know, I want to be able to do it on my phone, you know, so it'll be kind of cool.
Yeah, I'm kind of bringing you into this century, Ryan, giving you some iPhone tips.
Yeah, my Google Pixel for a while, and so we're recording this late. It's actually 7 p.m. on Wednesday night because I was trying to do this phone thing all day. I had to go pick up my car, like all this crazy stuff, but technology, first world problems. But so I got an iPhone now. So we'll be able to play with that a little bit. And we got to talk some USA football as always. Before we do, I just want to thank our sponsor, Trader Joe's. What an amazing year for Trader Joe's helping us out. And we hope, you know, we try to spread the word. I went in there the other day to pick up, we talk about the fresh flowers thing. Some really cool flowers, friend of mine, ended up having a medical procedure and I brought some flowers over and they were greatly appreciated. So they're really cool. Not expensive at all. So, you know, you can pick up some snacks, whatever you want to do. You get some good fresh produce, some cheese, maybe a 6-pack of beer, some wine. But if you want to bring flowers to a special someone in your life, you can do that too at Trader Joe's. So thanks again to Trader Joe's. Been a great year with them. And Keely, yeah, you know, after the pandemic's over, we'll bring you some flowers from Trader Joe's.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, I was thinking about making a cheese board for New Year's Eve just to, you know, do something to celebrate. So maybe go to Trader Joe's and pick up some flowers and some little cheeses and stuff like that.
Your roommates would appreciate that. You put a little bouquet of flowers on the table or something. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Are you a flower person? Do you like flowers? Not really.
Of course, Ryan. Why would I not love flowers? Flowers are great. They spruce up anything.
Yeah. Some girls are just like, you know, I like flowers. I mean, as a guy, you don't get them a lot. But, you know, sometimes it's like, nah, I'm not a big flower person. Like, I don't know. I think they're kind of cool. It's just a nice little gesture sometimes. So,
yeah, exactly.
So, yeah. So go to Trader Joe's and do that. All right. Well, we got to get to some what do we like to call this? Breaking news. There's been some defections for the USC Trojan football team. I apologize, I do have to update the scholarship distribution chart, and we'll do kind of a final update for that, and then it'll move forward to 2021 here. But Keely, so there was maybe we'll start with a couple of players that have left and declared for the NFL draft. Not a surprise, but, you know, probably maybe the best player on offense and the best player on defense potentially.
Yeah, pretty much. Elijah Vera Tucker and Talanoa Hufanga both declaring for the NFL draft. Obviously, we knew that was going to happen with Elijah Vera Tucker since he's already done that once before. Definitely saved USC's season coming back and helping out that offensive line. Big question marks going forward, how they're going to replace him and who's going to go at that left tackle spot. And then Talanoa Hufanga, just a bright spot on the defense. According to Pro Football Focus, he played 21 positions throughout the 6 games this season. So he was just so versatile and so talented. I'm bummed that we couldn't see him for 6 more games or for like a full regular season this year. So, but congrats to them and wish them the best going forward.
Yeah, for sure. 2 stud players for USC. And, if you, I don't know, you a person that likes to watch A Christmas Story, Keely, on the, you know, the TBS loop all day on Christmas?
I feel like you're gonna, I might be fired for this, but I don't, Ryan. You texted us twice on Christmas to watch it. And I was like, Ryan is really gung-ho about this.
Oh, every year. I got to watch it like all the way through at least once. And then, you know, you have it on sometimes, you know, switch it around and football comes on or whatever. But there's one scene where the father with the, you know, the famous lamp, you know, the mm-hmm. fishnet stocking leg lamp that he wins as a major award. And he puts it in the window and the wife is, you know, going nuts. She hates it. And she goes to water her plants and breaks the lamp. And he's so mad. And he says some kind of word as he's walking out to get the glue because they're out of glue. It sounds like hufunga or something like that. So I would think about that. So I just thought about that. Oh, yeah. It wasn't hufunga, but it was something along those lines. He didn't know what to say.
I was very curious where you were going to go with that. And that's not what I was expecting. So,
yeah. Well, you know, did I need to say that? No. Is it like late on a Wednesday and like we're going to start off weird tangents? Sure.
Yeah. It's kind of weird doing a late night podcast that's not an emergency podcast. I feel like it's very disorienting.
Yeah, my emergency was just like technology getting stuff to work today. So here we are. But that's okay. Yeah. So check it out next year, Keely. It's a good one. So moving on, Elijah Vera Tucker, Talanoa Hufanga. But there were also a couple of players that entered the NCAA transfer portal. Likely we're going to see more, likely see some guys transfer in, but maybe give an update on those two guys.
Yeah, so on Monday, Marquis Stepp entered the portal officially, and then Connor Murphy entered the portal on Tuesday. It's interesting because, you know, Twitter is always reactionary, and I think a lot of people thought the sky was falling, and it's kind of a mixed bag. Connor Murphy is a guy who never could really find a home on USC's defense, could never really crack the starting lineup. I know he was excited with a defensive change with Todd Orlando coming in. Maybe he could get into that starting lineup, but he just couldn't crack it. He did get some playing time kind of in the scrappy games like Washington State where you knew USC was going to win, you know, in that garbage time. So that's just expected for Connor Murphy. Now, Marquis Stepp, that's something that we had heard. He was a little disgruntled. And then pretty much right around when the Oregon loss happened, I was told that Marquis Stepp was entering the portal, but it didn't become official until this Monday. So it's been something that he had thought about and you know, a lot of guys, you know, Matt Fink, they've gone into the portal and come back. Marquis Stepp, I don't see him being one of those guys. I think he's going to be really utilized somewhere else where, you know, they've prioritized running the ball. So that's something to watch out for. How are USC's other running backs taking, you know, being a poor rushing offense this season and the future of that? You know, I know a lot of guys want to get the best out of their college career. And you just hear some rumblings that other guys, especially the running backs, are disgruntled on that front. So just something to keep an eye out for. We're hearing some things behind the scenes.
Yeah. The running back situation, we're probably going to talk about that a lot with some of the questions today. Connor Murphy, you know, you see him and Oluwole Batiku. They were both sort of like these guys that were in that position, but never really, you know, did a whole lot. Greg Biggins tweeted out that he felt like Connor Murphy should be a tackle, an offensive lineman.
I saw that, yeah.
Fill out a little bit, so man, we'll see.
Connor Murphy was one of those guys who he was kind of a practice player. Like, he'd make critical plays in practice, but then it would never really transfer into games. He never had that consistency. So, you know, if you have multiple defensive line coaches and multiple coordinators and it just doesn't work out, then I think that's when you need to start. It makes sense to look at the portal.
Yeah. Well, we wish all those guys the best. It's been fun covering, you know, guys like Talanoa Hufanga are just amazing to cover, but they're not going to be around anymore. We talked about the bowl opt out, I believe, on the last podcast, or we definitely did on Tunnel Vision.
Yes. Did
you happen to catch any of the? So only two Pac-12 teams are in bowls, and Colorado was one of them. They were in the bowl, the Alamo Bowl, that USC would have likely been in, almost definitely, and against a familiar opponent. In Texas, Bijan Robinson, a former USC commit, ran for 1,000 yards in that game or something, but actually got their doors blown off. I don't know. Did you check any of that out, Keely?
No, I saw the beginning of the game, but I was working on other stuff. So I think that's when USC. Oh, I think it's also worth noting that Andy Enfield said that Drake London is going to focus on football. So I was actually working on that story while the game was on. So, So Drake London's going to focus on football, not go into play basketball this season. Enfield's quote was kind of vague. It kind of implied that he wasn't going to play basketball at USC ever. But then he said this season, but given the way that London has been playing, if he has another season like he did, he probably won't even be around for next year's basketball season. So it kind of makes sense. So just an update there on Drake London.
Yeah.
Sorry, I forgot about that.
I feel bad for Jordan Moore, who, you know, he's the, you know, does the basketball radio play by play and loves to talk about the crossover stuff. So unfortunately, Drake London won't be doing that anymore. But, you know, it makes sense. You want to focus on football. They got a lot of talent over on that USC basketball team, so I don't know if they really need him all that much, but you know, I think it's probably better for him to focus on football. He's done a pretty darn good job being a receiver there.
Yeah, for sure.
Got snubbed, right? He didn't did he make a all Pac-12? Was he like honorable mention or something? I forget. I don't know if he was.
He was on PFF's all Pac-12 team, and then he was a second teamer, I think, on the AP list. But he didn't get first team at all for like significant listings. So,
but in the Pac-12 itself, like their team.
Yeah. He didn't make it at all. And I think Chris Steele like tweeted in all caps, like, where is Drake London on this? So no love for London.
No, that was a little strange. And he was the MVP of a couple of games, I think, just, you know, some of the catches made.
USC's out of it if he doesn't make that fingertip grab against Arizona State to start the season. So, yeah,
that was insane.
Yep.
The one where he caught the one from Slovis and just ran it for a touchdown and like
UCLA.
Fumbling the ball and everything. It's just like, get that really woke USC up, you know?
Yep.
I don't think if he doesn't do that and doesn't go, you know, all like hero ball, I don't think USC wins that game either. So, I mean, you could say two games, like without him, you don't win.
Yeah, exactly. So a little weird that he was left off of some lists.
Yeah, when you only won five and two of them you can like directly attribute to him, that is like, okay.
Yeah.
He was definitely important for USC. Mm-hmm. Why don't we do this? Let's take a quick break and we'll come back and start answering questions. Unless there's anything else you got, Keely.
No, I think so. I didn't comment on the Texas-Colorado game, but yeah, that was...
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah, real quick. Well, you didn't get to see it, though.
I know it was a bad showing, and I know Bijan Robinson went off, which I think someone made the joke on Twitter that Bijan Robinson was able to run against a Pac-12 team more than actual Pac-12 teams were, or anyone on USC's team was, so it's just... You know, one of those guys, I feel like we're kind of in that era where you keep hearing names that, oh, right, USC was after that guy, but he's on a different team and being successful. So it's kind of a sign of the times a little bit.
When you follow recruiting and Gerard and, you know, our staff, we do, you know, do a great job. I'll pat everyone on the back. They're awesome at following these guys and telling you about people to know. I always love seeing what those players do that you knew like were USC was totally into them or trying to get them and they don't end up going there. And one of them is Fred Warner. So do you remember him? He ended up going to BYU, was a linebacker, and is just a stud for the San Francisco 49ers. And I was watching, they had a game on Amazon Prime, the Niners game, and I was watching that. And you could listen to different commentators. And so Bucky Brooks and Daniel Jeremiah and Joy Taylor were doing one of the feeds. So I was doing that and they kept talking about him. And, you know, Daniel's a friend of the show and, you know, he loves following the site and stuff. I sent him a text and like, if he remembered, and he's like, yeah, he didn't quite remember it, but that's one of those things like Gerard would always talk about Fred Warner. Like this guy's going to be amazing. And, you know, he is. So it's kind of funny when you see like guys that don't end up at USC, you're like, maybe they didn't recruit as hard or whatever. And our analysts are like, yeah, you should be recruiting this guy. And then he turns to be like an absolute stud.
Yeah. Yeah. Or you just hear the casual like Jackson Carmen or something for Clemson and stuff like that. And you're like, right, that was a USC target as well. It's just always like, oh, OK, it's just funny. I don't know. It's a weird circumstance.
It'll be a little weirder like when if you know Bryce Young has like some amazing career at Alabama and like wins a couple of national championships. You're like, yeah, that was.
Yeah.
But it's a guy that's committed to your team for a long time. Remember like Dalen Hayes at, you know, Notre Dame.
Yep.
Anyone that's committed for quite a long time, and they end up, you know. I don't, Hayes is doing pretty good there, right? He's not.
Yeah, he was injured, but he, yeah, he's definitely one of those guys who always is like flagged in my head because he told me when I asked him about the how solid his commitment to USC was, he was like, "It's like a wedding ring. You don't take that off. You're proud of your commitment." And then he ended up decommitting and going to Notre Dame. So always a memorable one for me in that sense.
I think we interviewed him at the Coliseum, right? Like, did we go over after a camp or something?
I think so, yeah. Yeah, we met up at the Coliseum, and then I think I interviewed him after a high school game as well. So, interesting times in the recruiting world.
It is, yeah, and obviously, there's a lot of great players out there, and you're not going to, you know, USC's not going to get them all.
Yeah.
Sometimes they'll miss on a guy. Sometimes they'll, like, stop recruiting him. He ends up being good or not. You know, sometimes you avoid a guy, and you're like, wow, that was a, you saved, you know, save yourself some grief there by not recruiting that guy. Mm-hmm. But other times it works the other way. You know, you don't really know all the time. But it is neat to kind of see, like, I remember that name. But his name definitely, you know, Bijan's name came up a lot in that game. And, you know, Colorado just, I mean, man, they were just boat raced. It was close in the first half. But you could see Texas could pretty much just run the ball when they wanted to. They were doing some weird stuff. Like, there was a 4th-and-1. Like, they were 4th and inches, and they, you know, Texas went into like a shotgun and pitched it wide, and it was like, you know, could barely get back to the line of scrimmage. There's some weird stuff. You're like, what are you doing? Like, you can push this team around. But Texas did that. You know, they lose their starting quarterback, and the backup comes in and throws for like 4 touchdowns. Like, it was like, it was just like a different class of citizens out there. You know, Carl Durrell is doing a great job, I think, you know, to go, you know, to win 4 games in this crazy season, 4-1 or whatever it was, or was it 5-1? I forget what it was. But yeah, I think they're 4-1 and end up 4-2. But pretty amazing that he was able to do that in the first year without spring practice, without like meeting his guys until like February over Zoom. They did a pretty good job there, but Texas just seemed a little more motivated and just a better team overall. So not a good showing for the Pac-12.
Yeah, not right at all. Gate.
But I got that one right. I took Texas -9.5, and I was like, yeah, they're going to win by a lot. And they did. So I was, you know, feel good about that one.
Well done, Ryan. But I will say, your Ryan prediction, you're 0-2 in my mind, because you were doubting Herm Edwards, which has kind of worked out. And you thought Colorado was going to win 0 games this season. So you're a little off on that front.
That's true. No, I mean, I think the preseason stuff. But I've turned, like, the Herm Edwards stuff. I talked to Chris Cartman about it early, and it was just like, yeah, you know, okay, but, you know, he kind of convinced me that the team at the time, they had like, when he came in, they had like Nikhil Harry and I'm blanking on the quarterback's name, but they had a lot of experience, and you know, now they're recruiting well, they've hired well, and it's just a good system. They keep games close, and you know, obviously USC was really lucky to win that one this year, but I think Herm will be good. You know, Carl Durrell looks like they're going to get things going in the right direction. We'll see Jed Fish, what he's going to do at Arizona. Not super high expectations, but whatever.
Yeah, that's come up a lot. Interesting. You know? Mm-hmm.
Bruce Weber did a good piece on him in The Athletic, if you want to check it out. And, you know, sometimes you write good pieces about guys that you know well. He's a well-liked individual, you know, around the football community. And I think he'll be a lot less prickly than Kevin Sumlin was, who wouldn't let you talk to anybody or see anything, or I think you needed to open things up a little bit more there and kind of get people involved. And someone just sort of like kept it all closed. And then you're going to like a 12-game losing streak and you can't talk to anybody. Like, it just doesn't make a lot of sense. You need to make that program fun again. And, you know, we'll see if Jed Fish is the guy to do it.
Yep, we'll see. It'll be interesting because he's, if people can come, opening up spring camp to media and fans. So, nice to see open access.
Yeah. He said he would do that.
Apparently, yeah. So
yeah. Which is like pretty much the exact opposite. You know, like if you're in like a bad relationship and whatever is wrong, like A is wrong, you know, you want to find B. You know, you want to do something completely different, you know. And if this was all closed down in the last regime and you lost 12 games in a row, this regime, let's open things up and make things better. I mean, we saw that at USC when Ed Orgeron took over, you know, just kind of changed things around. You just want to do something different than what the predecessor did, and especially if the predecessor was screwing up.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
all right.
It's been a long tangent, Ryan. Sorry about that.
It was a long tangent. But there was some newsy stuff in there, too, so we got some of that stuff. Let's take a break and come back and answer questions.
Picture that super soft t-shirt you love sleeping in. The one that gets softer and softer the more you wear it. Now you can bring that same lived-in softness to your entire bed with Signature Vintage Wash Sheets from Boll & Branch. This all-new collection is even softer than your favorite t-shirt, with a distinctly relaxed look and feel for your best night's sleep. Just like all Boll & Branch bedding, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets start with the highest quality, 100% organic cotton. The lived-in feel comes from a small batch washing process, creating a level of softness you've never felt before. And it's not just the feel. Boll & Branch mastered the laid-back aesthetic using a special technique that creates the well-loved look you'll find with vintage jeans. And true to the Boll & Branch hallmark, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets get softer and softer with every wash. Right now, you can get 15% off your first order with promo code ODYSSEY and save on their most relaxing sheets. So head to BollAndBranch.com today. That's B-O-L-L and Branch.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All righty, we are back here on the Peristyle Podcast, Keely Yore and Ryan Abraham. I want to play this drop for you.
Now for my favorite part of the show. What did I say? Talk to the audience. Oh, God, this is always death.
Yeah, we got a lot of questions to talk to the audience about. Keely, we did get a voicemail, passionate one, from Paul from Central Virginia. I'm sorry, Paul, it was way too long. I can't play it. But he was saying, all I hear about when he referenced our mailbag extravaganza episode, which this is kind of going to be another one of those, I guess, because there's a lot in the mailbag. Yeah. He goes, I hear Clay Helton's name. I don't hear Tim Drevno's name. He's not seeing the offensive line players get better. The run game is bad. And he's saying it's all on Tim Drevno. It's his responsibility. You got to make a change there. Any initial thoughts from Paul from Virginia, Central Virginia's voicemail?
See, you know, it's hard to put it all on Tim Drevno because this is a layering effect of bad recruiting and bad continuity of coaching. Because prior to, I believe, I'm blanking on his name, Ryan. Who was before Tim Drevno?
Neil Callaway.
Neil Callaway. Prior to Neil Callaway, there were like, Zach Banner had five offensive line coaches in 5 years. Like, there was not any sort of real development for USC's offensive linemen. And so when you don't have, like, a lot of talented players to develop, I don't think you can fully blame it on him unless he was slacking in recruiting, if that makes sense. But the crazy part is everyone's mad at Tim Drevno, but he's about to probably have back-to-back first-rounders in the NFL draft. So, I mean, yes, USC's offensive line has struggled. It needs to get better. But I think the reason why we mentioned Clay Helton is probably because it's a wholesale change that we're mentioning. We're not trying to excuse Tim Drevno from it, but the offensive line definitely needs to get better. And Tim Drevno, as position coach, has to take some responsibility for that. So that's a mixed bag for me, Ryan. I don't know if that made sense.
It does, Keely. It does make sense. And Paul, one of the things is there have been such wholesale changes. And one of the wholesale changes was, you know, changing out the offensive line coach when Neil Callaway and T. Martin were both let go during the season, and you moved Tim Drevno over. And that was weird from the beginning. You hired Drevno, and you have him as the running backs coach. Didn't make a lot of sense, but it sort of seemed like he was the offensive line coach in waiting. So that's your offensive line coach in waiting. He's now the offensive line coach. Again, it's hard not to have this all reflect on Clay Helton, because he's already replaced the offensive line coach when you were like desperate and needed change to happen. And this is who you hired. And if that guy's not right, do you have any kind of confidence that the next guy is going to be right? There's only so much you can rearrange those deck chairs that the Titanic is still sinking, you know? So it's hard to point out, yeah, all USC's problems are going to go away if you get rid of the offensive line coach. Like, well, you've done that for every position coach already. Like, I don't know what to, you know, I'm not saying, you know, it's really hard to evaluate offensive line. You can tell in general, like the running game's not working. Things aren't, you know, it's not great, but is it Tim Drebno? Is it you're not practicing it enough in practice? And that, is that coming from the head coach or is that coming from Graham Harrell? I mean, it's hard to say, but Tim Drebno could be like a problem. Like, I'm not saying he is or isn't, but it's like this is a smaller problem compared to the bigger one overall. And when you got all those kind of big problems on the team, it you have to go to the top and go to the head coach.
Mm-hmm. And I know I go on this soapbox at least once a month on this podcast, but I cannot tell you how much it changed the course of USC's offensive line when Clay Helton kept on Neil Callaway after the Cotton Bowl game, after that season, the 2017 season, because we all knew that there were deficiencies in the trenches. And yet Neil Callaway came back as a poor recruiter and a poor offensive line coach. So then you don't have guys replacing the five-star talent, the four-star talent that you had. And now you have bad development, player development over the course of years. So it's a chicken or the egg, but it's a problem where you're kind of lying in that bed right now.
Yeah. No, I agree with you there. There were changes that needed to be made earlier, you know, and weren't. And you're sort of like we're a knee-jerk reaction to making some of these changes. And that's where you are right now. But, you know, you've already swapped out the offensive line coach, you know, once. You want to do it again in like 2 years later? I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying you should or shouldn't, but Paul, I just don't think that's like the end-all solution to like, okay, you replace the offensive line coach, then everything's going to get better. Like, it's, you know, there's a culture in the team, and that's not coming from Drebno. It's coming from Clay Helton.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. On that note, Ryan, I'm going to go to an email that we got from Mike from Fulshear, Texas, who also ended his email with hashtag Team Stock Neutral. So shout out to Mike, MVP of the pod already. So he wanted to explain, I know in the mailbag extravaganza, we were talking about how we didn't really fully understand why fans were really latching on to replacing Graham Harrell. So he tried to explain for those fans, including himself. He said, Ryan, you're confused about the fans' focus on replacing Graham Harrell. So I'm going to try and use your house for sale analogy to explain it to you. We want to sell our house for the most money possible, but that would require $100,000 in repairs, but we only have $20,000. Do you shrug your shoulders and sell the house as is, or do you slap a new coat of paint on the house, get new carpeting, and use the $20,000 to slap some lipstick on the pig and hope you therefore can sell the house for $40,000 more than if you did nothing? Personally, I would like to try and pocket that theoretical extra $20,000. I think those of us in the, quote, replace Graham Harrell camp all agree that replacing Clay is the correct move, but you also convinced us that isn't going to happen before the 2021 season, so we need some hope going into the next season. Personally, I just need SC to make some improvements so that I can fool myself into thinking that the 2021 season won't be a disaster as we wait out Clay's buyout. As an 86 SC grad, I don't have the option to declare that I no longer support our Trojans. Fight on, Mike from Fulshear, Texas.
Thanks, Mike, for that one. Not sure I 100% get the analogy. Is Graham Harrell the $20,000? I mean, I'm not sure. Like, is replacing Graham Harrell like the $20,000 and, you know, the lipstick and new carpeting and stuff? Is that what he's talking about? Do you get it?
I think so. He's saying that investing some money in a new coordinator would make the house that you have to be in a little bit more manageable, I think.
Gotcha.
Someone tweeted at us last pod that we used too many analogies, so apologies for, I think it was Judy who tweeted at us, so sorry about that. We're already into analogies in the podcast, but we're trying.
I like analogies, and you know
you do.
I'm sorry people don't like them, but like, this is our show. We do what we want. No, we're listening to you guys, but see, I mean, that's who I am.
It's true. Yeah, it's your brand. Here's the thing about Mike's email is I think this analogy or what fans want in Graham Harrell is what you already tried to do with the defensive coordinator replacements. That was kind of the renovations when you can't sell the house, you know? And the problem is that that experiment failed to a certain degree. I don't think Todd Orlando failed, but I think having a successful season under USC at USC failed. So the obvious solution is to replace Clay Helton, but you can't, or they're not willing to. So what do you do now? I think you're just wasting effort, time, and money by trying to get rid of Graham Harrell at this point.
Yeah. And so if we want to stick with that analogy is, okay, you have $20,000 to trying to fix up the house a little bit. So this is replacing Graham Harrell. The problem is you're like, okay, what we want to do is there's this awesome, you know, we were going to do, I don't know, we're going to replace the granite in the kitchen and it'll be, and repaint the cabinet. So you're going to like kind of redo the kitchen over a little bit, not like full redo, but you're going to do just enough. The big selling point though, for the house though, was the kitchen. So you're putting your $20,000 into the thing that's already the big seller. And Graham Harrell is like, that's what Clay Helton's got. He's got an offense that has the potential to be top 10, top 20 kind of offense. You're replacing Harrell, like that's your, you know, most lucrative, the lucrative part of your coaching staff. I mean, that's the one that would have the potential to be hired by somebody else. You know, it's too early on, you know, Todd Orlando and stuff, but Graham Harrell is someone that, you know, people are going to interview for head coaching jobs. So you put some money into the house, but you might be fixing the wrong thing. And then you make the house worse, if that makes sense.
Yeah. But I would say that if this was the kitchen, it sprung a leak this season a little bit. It caused you some issues because if, right, you didn't, yeah, if you didn't spring the leak, then the house probably would have been fine.
Yeah, no, it was no, I think that's true. I mean, there were some great moments, you know, like that first quarter against Washington State and stuff. So there's like that, you see why people love the kitchen, but the kitchen didn't perform as well. Like you said, there were some leaks, you know, maybe the dishwasher doesn't get your stuff clean, like whatever it was like, oh, it's a beautiful dishwasher. Like it's stainless steel. It looks awesome. But then, you know, you take the dishes out and there's spots all over them and it doesn't get them clean. And you're like, oh, well, it used to get them clean. I don't know why it's not getting them clean now. So yeah, but that's I would say Graham Harrell is sort of like the feather in Clay Helton's cap. Like that's like his ace in the hole. And if you're trying to replace that, like I think the whole team would be lost. Like I think, you know, I don't know if you're going to get someone better to come work for Clay Helton at this point, but you know, I like the analogy, Troy. Good.
A for effort, Mike. Hold on.
Yeah. Nice, Mike. You want to do another email?
Sure. We actually have a text, I believe, from LA Fred, who said he has two questions. One, how many guys do you see entering the transfer quote unquote porthole? Shouts to Gerard Martinez. And then two, do you see any surprises in terms of guys deciding to come back for another year? Seniors or draft eligible guys? Thanks. Love all your content. LA Fred.
Thanks, LA Fred. Let's see. So, surprises. I mean, I think they're probably going to be some surprises. Like it just kind of happens that way. I think you're going to see, we've seen two enter the porthole so far. I'm guessing there's going to be more. There'll probably be some surprises. There's always guys that are just seem unhappy. The fact that Marquise Stepp is in there, you know, I think Keeley's talked about it. You could probably see another running back go in there. It doesn't look great, you know, right now, but a lot of this is recruiting again. Coaches have to be working on these players. We've definitely heard players express interest in going into the porthole, and then maybe their name doesn't pop up in there, or the coaches sort of talk them out of it. They're delaying a little bit. So there, I think there's a lot of talk going on. How many people end up pulling the trigger? It's hard to say like a number. But I would say, you know, I think there's going to be more. I think there'll be a handful of more guys, I think, that end up entering the portal. And like Keeley mentioned earlier, Elijah Vera Tucker was in there and came back out. We've seen a number of players do that. Matt Fink did it. Velus Jones did it. And then he left again. So, but yeah, I'm kind of guessing you're going to see some more. Any thoughts there, Keely?
Yeah, I've definitely heard multiple guys that want to transfer. But the thing is when it comes to off-season transfer talk, it's such a fluid situation. And sometimes, especially right after the season ends, it's a little bit of a just emotion flare-up. And then they get more settled in with the coaches, or the coaches work on them, and then they kind of back off of that. So it's a fluid situation right now, but I've definitely heard that people want to enter the portal, not in a mass exodus way that I think Twitter wants to suggest, but some people are frustrated, and you see that when you have a season kind of end the way it did this season. So it's a fluid situation, but I'm expecting more people to enter the porthole, if you will.
Yeah, and you know, like I said, there'll probably be some surprises as far as like guys coming back.
I might be surprised if Tyler Vaughns comes back.
Yeah.
For another year.
That would be sick.
But then maybe not. I could talk myself out of that because, you know, the bright spots of Brew McCoy and Drake London, it just seems like it's their time to kind of take the reins. But then, you know, Tyler Vaughns, I don't know what else Tyler has to show or prove in that sense.
Yeah, it would mostly just be about setting records. And then you're just like, why are you doing that? But, you know, if you do that, you do that. But yeah, well, thank you for that, LA Fred. Appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. We have an email from someone. I don't think we had their name in it. Maybe it was clipped off, so apologies. But they said, so you're telling me the players and coaches were in agreement and opting out of the bowl game. I think you need to get some off-the-record quotes on this one. Let me see. Half of the staff is from Texas. A good portion of the players are from Texas. They have multiple commits and prospects from Texas. They would have played in front of family and friends in Texas. And cherry on top, they would have played against the King of Texas, the University of Texas. I think, to be blunt, the administration and Helton flat out did not want to play this game, as they think they would get embarrassed and did not want to deal with the aftermath. I don't think this was the reason they opted out. I really think this was the reason. Your thoughts? So first off,
yeah, go ahead.
Off the record quotes, that's not really a thing. Like, you can get a quote, an anonymous quote, but there's not like an off the record quote. But the thing is that I was hearing from the player sphere and kind of that whole team sourcing sphere prior to USC even losing to Oregon, that they weren't really feeling like a bowl game if it wasn't the Fiesta Bowl. So it wasn't, I don't know, I can tell you that, and the war room went over really poorly, and people thought that all that sourcing of that news came from Heritage Hall. It did not come from Heritage Hall. It was team sources who definitely talked about how they were just very burnt out. Their players are not professionally played. They're the only ones on campus. School has been out since November. I went into this on the last podcast, but there was really a sense of burnout from the players. And now, if they were in the Fiesta Bowl, I think we would be covering that. I think they would want to play. But if you have nothing to play for, you don't have a prestigious bowl, I think they were very burnt out and they didn't want to play in it. The problem is that I don't think they were expecting the blowback that happened once they said that they were opting out, and they opted out pretty quickly after the loss. And so the sources that some of the sources, when I circled back, kind of changed their tune a little bit, because I think the blowback got to them a little bit. So that's, I think, why some of the rumors popped up as to, oh, well, they didn't have a choice, et cetera, et cetera. The players just were burnt out and on the whole didn't want to play in a non-prestigious bowl, pretty much. So that's my sensing of things just from the sources I've talked to.
And that was a Troy Trojan that sent email. Thank you for that email. And I don't think the issue is, though, I don't think USC knew who they would have been playing in the Alamo Bowl. Texas, I think, was a name that we mentioned, but there was more like people thought maybe Iowa State. Well, that was going to be for the Fiesta. We've heard like Indiana could have been in the Fiesta. I mean, there was the bowl projections. I don't think if you knew it was going to be Texas, you knew it was going to be in Texas, but you didn't know it would be against the University of Texas. So I don't think that's something that they were like, oh, we want to avoid that. I think like what Keely was saying, I think all that's true, but I do feel like the blowback that they got, not from, you know, just the opt out, really from the game itself, is what, you know, part of this is that, you know, just they're 5-0, Clay Helton was doing his thing and talking about the 1-0 every week and all that stuff. And you didn't have to play the first place team in either division. And I think they fully expected to win that game. I think USC, and you saw what Dante Williams tweeted, or he talked about on Trojans Live, taking back the West and all that kind of stuff. I think they were really disappointed to lose that game. And I don't think, I don't know if anyone could have anticipated the fire that were coming out of USC fans after losing that game. And I don't blame them. I'm not saying that they were out of line. I mean, sure, they're somewhere, but there was real fire.
Yeah. I don't think anyone on team-wise anticipated that.
No. And it sort of reinforced what Keely was saying. They felt like, all right, we need to not playing in the Fiesta Bowl. There's really no point. And then seeing how bad it was, and then knowing you're going to play a better team in the bowl game, and be fair, likely lose. I don't think they were going to sign up for that either. But I think there was just a lot of factors in there. But it's not like the players being burnt out was not real, and this was a cover up. It was. I think what you're saying is true. I don't think the administration wanted to put trot Clay Helton out there again and have him do more media and all that stuff. We haven't heard from him since the game, outside of Trojans Live. We probably won't hear from him until signing day. That's just kind of the way they do things. If you had a bowl game, there would have been a lot of talk. And, there wouldn't have been talk about, oh, this is fun. You're going to the Fiesta Bowl and you won the Pac-12. It's about you blew it, and how did you lose to the second place team and not even the first place team and all that stuff. All those things you said, to take back the West, all that stuff would have been kind of thrown back in their faces. And I think it was just another reason that, when they saw how poorly received the loss to Oregon was, they didn't want to have another one of those on this season, just sort of cut bait and move on.
Yeah, I think that's really what it was. And to explain the player's mindset doesn't necessarily mean that it's that's totally the right choice and we agree. I'm just explaining what I was told and what I've heard from sources. So that's just what it is. If there are other factors involved, that makes sense as well. But that was one of the main factors. And so I can say that from a sourcing standpoint for sure.
And, people, I talked to more people afterwards. And for the most part, they were all saying, yeah, players wanted to play. But it's sort of one of those things that, like Keely said, you can kind of, you read the room, you're like, yeah, the right thing to say is we wanted to play, not we didn't want to play. But it's what's the prominent voice at the time. Sometimes there's not everyone on the same page. You can't look at the players as a collection. All the players wanted to do this. I don't think you could say all the players like a single thing in this world. There's 120 different people. Some people are going to have very different thoughts about every topic you can imagine. There's not everyone's on the same page. I think the we're burnt out voices were real, and they were kind of the most heard. And then after the blowback, the sort of I wanted to play, those voices probably are a little more heard afterwards.
Well, who's going to stand up and say after the rage that came from USC fans, yeah, you know what? I actually wanted that. And they're right being mad at me. You know what I mean? And just people don't really do that. aren't willing to be that really unpopular take. I had that idea. You know what I mean? It just doesn't work that way.
It does not. But yeah, so that's sort of where we are now. I'm going to do a voicemail. That's okay. Keely.
Yeah.
So this is our buddy, Curtis from Moreno Valley. Let me play it for you.
Hey guys, this is Evan from Tempe.
You know what? That was not Curtis from Moreno Valley, but let's play Evan from Tempe. So my apologies. we'll go to Curtis later.
Hey guys, this is Evan from Tempe. I basically want to know, I hear you guys saying that it's basically impossible for Helton to not be the head coach next year and that he's going to be the head coach, and I agree with you. But I just want to know, is there any sort of possibility that we'll know that he could possibly get fired after the Cincinnati's bowl game and, Mike Bohm wants to hire Luke Fickell and call him up and we possibly know then? If it's possible Clay Helton could be gone, or is he just definitely going to be there? No chance. No need to even think about that. Thank you. And I'll call you guys again sometime. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. I mean, we've said this a lot. I would be extremely shocked if USC made some sort of move. We talked about this before the season. It would take a disaster, kind of turn into a disaster, a 5-1 disaster, which is weird, but you know, it was definitely disaster status, you know, after the Pac-12 championship game. But I wouldn't be holding my breath for Luke Fickell to come to USC after Cincinnati's bowl game. I think USC and Clay Helton are going to be hand in hand heading into the 2021 season. And if there is some sort of move that ends up being made, it would either be during that 2021 season or immediately afterwards. That would be my guess, but I don't anticipate any move being made this year.
Yeah, agreed, Ryan. If it did somehow happen, it would be an absolute Hail Mary that it happened. And I still don't think that that is possible. Because you have to get a lot of levels on board, and that's something where it just sounds like that's not there, at least right now.
And there's, you know, we've talked about this a million times, but it is a rather large buyout. There's a lot, you know, there's factors involved in
that. Well, we actually have a question about that, Ryan, if I can jump in. We have an email from Frank in Sacramento who said, Ryan, can we get an update on how much it will cost to pay off Clay Helton and move on? If it was $20 million a year ago, it must be $15 million today, given a 4-year buyout. Frank in Sacramento.
Yeah, no, that's incorrect. There's so many numbers being thrown out there. And I remember, I think Yahoo Sports put $15 million like 2 years ago or something. And we're like, wow, that seems really high. And like, it can't be $15 million. And I think Dan Weber was like, there's no way it's $15 million. The USC couldn't be that dumb. And then we start hearing numbers like $40 million. And you're like, whoa. And so if you want to go back and check the war rooms and stuff, we put a lot more detail into that. But we know in 2018, Clay Helton was making $4.6 million. We assume at this point, because usually how these contracts work, or they do get bumped up by percentage, he's in the $5 million range now, and still 3 more years on the deal. But there's also, from what you know, our sources have told us, benefits that need to be paid out. Obviously, there's assistant coaches and things like that. Yeah, it's north of $20 million still. And once you get into the 2021 and you're paying Clay Helton for that year, it becomes a little bit more digestible. But it's not going to be super digestible, but it's certainly not digestible now unless you're going to put like $23-25 million or something down just to get rid of your head coach. You're asking a booster to flush a lot of money down the toilet just to try to make a change. So, yeah, that's kind of where you are right now.
We have an email from Alex from Chicago who says, Hi, Ryan and Keely. Thank you for the awesome job you guys do. Thank you, Alex. Even when USC loses, it is at least enjoyable to listen and watch you guys. Is it me? Or does Clay Helton always look scared when he holds his news conferences? From his body language to what he says, it seems to me that he has zero confidence in his own ability to coach. Clay Helton is made of clay. He is soft. USC needs a coach that is made out of steel or at least concrete. No more Clays. This is not child's play. Heck, Clay Helton is so bad, USC would win more games without any head coach. Fight on, Alex from Chicago. P.S. Doesn't Clay remind you of Paul Hackett?
No, I think they're different. I mean, I think Clay and Paul are pretty different. Paul was more of this like NFL. He definitely didn't relate to the players the way Clay Helton does. Like, they're different. I mean, you're just saying those are two coaches you don't like, so you're equating them, but they're definitely different. I mean, as far as like looking scared, I think he has his talking points, and that's when he's going into a press conference. He knows what he's going to say. It's going to be, this is the narrative you're going to go with. And he's not, you know, people get mad. Like, you got to ask him this. Like, well, he asks questions like that. And he'll talk around them and say something else and say, just kind of stick to his talking points. And that's just who Clay Helton is. I wouldn't say he looks scared. I'm not saying he's the most confident person in the world when he's up there, but I think he knows what he wants to say. And he's willing to say it. It's obviously better when he's passionate when they win. And it might be a win that a fan thinks is ugly and terrible, coming back against Arizona in the final minute. He's going to be pumped up for it. Like, it's like they just won the Super Bowl. And that's just kind of who he is. Where if you're going to look at it from a realistic point of view, like a last second comeback against a team that's now on a 12-game losing streak. Yeah, when you're the favorite to win the Pac-12, it probably shouldn't be something that's happening, but it is. But he'll talk about it like this that they fought and this they have grit and all this stuff. And you're like, yeah, it was a comeback against the worst team in the league. I don't know if you really want to say that stuff, but that's kind of who he is. So I wouldn't say, I don't know if you feel he looks scared, Keely, but I wouldn't say that.
No, I mean, he has his Clay Helton shtick, which is just like he is an authentic, he tries to be an authentic, like we'll throw out some jokes and laugh in the pressers. Like that's just his Clay Helton thing. And I think if he tried to be something else, it would just come across as like he's trying to be something else. So I think he's kind of in a lose-lose situation in that sense. And I mean, he's had the like tough guy, we're going to do this persona. I mean, homework for everyone listening, if you're bored this week, go look at Clay Helton's press conference in the John McKay Center when he got hired. He was so fiery and so passionate. And I don't think we've fully seen that since then, but it's a different persona for him. It's definitely changed. He talked about blue collar running and all that, which is interesting to think about now at this point in time. But he's come out with fire. I think the point I'm trying to make is you can say the right things, you can have the passion or whatever, but if it doesn't mean that will translate to the field. You know what I mean? I think that's what this question suggests. But it's a part of the reason why USC had the comebacks that they did is because they're fighting for Clay Helton. You know, I've heard from players that like Clay was very inspirational and helped them come back from games this year. So, you know, it's having a very like tough persona doesn't translate into wins necessarily, you know? So it is what it is.
It is. And that's Clay Helton. I mean, that's the guy that USC hired and that's who the head coach is. And he's going to look for, I mean, that's just the way he operates. He's going to look for these positive things. And sometimes he'll say something like that, you know, that'll echo in USC Trojan fans' heads and then be reiterated over and over again when they see it just was complete nonsense about, you know, I'm personally going to take over turnovers and penalties. I think someone like on the Peristyle message board made a meme out of that or whatever. It was from like the 2018 spring game. And like since then, you know, penalties have been awful. I think they did pretty good on turnovers this year. Well, they had some real bad games and some better games, but you know, that, or like the thing that really bothered me this year is like they just happened to run for about 170 yards in the first two games. And he said like LSU and Alabama, that's what they do. That's what we're going to do. And it's like, since he said that, the running game became absolutely awful. And it was just like, you didn't need to say that. Like it wasn't like we've done things in practice to make sure we're going to run for 175 yards a game. Not, we just happen to run for 175 yards a game. And you assume that, oh, well, what we're doing is going to make it so we can run for 175 yards a game, even though we didn't address the running game at all. You just happen to do that. So, I don't get it. It's sort of like you flip a coin, like, two times and it comes up heads. You're like, well, this coin always flips to heads. And then it's like tails, tails, tails. Like, oh crap. Well, it was heads the first two times. Like, why isn't it heads again? I feel like that's kind of what happened.
Yeah. He definitely has bad quotes. And I think everyone is having them pop into their head right now. He does. And I know that behind the scenes, they've tried to work on him not saying things that are like very quotable and like age very poorly. But that's kind of just who he is. Like I said, it is what it is. This is Clay Helton. He's going to say things that age poorly, very definitive, that don't turn out well. It's kind of just what it is.
Yeah. All right. What else we got?
We have an email from Ryan Andrews, Ryan from the OC, shouts at OC. He says, hey guys, love the podcast and all your insights. They are both honest, but realistic, and it's appreciated. Don't you guys find it ironic that every schedule change ended up being easier for USC and we still couldn't take advantage? No Bama beatdown, no embarrassing loss to our historic rival Notre Dame. Even as the season went on, it got easier. Escaped from the second best team, Colorado, avoided the North champs, Washington, and we still failed to take advantage to go undefeated and win the Pac-12. If we couldn't do it this season, what hope do you see for next season with less talent? Trojan fan losing his optimism, Ryan from the OC, class of 08.
Well, I mean, it's hard to, you know, it's hard to argue. Ryan, nice name. I like that. This should have been USC's year. And that's why I wrote the column that said the season was a failure, because we've already seen Elijah Vera Tucker leave. We've already seen Talanoa Hufanga leave. You've already seen Marquis Stepp leave. You know that the recruiting class from 2020 wasn't great. 2021's better for sure. So you're going to have some opportunities there. But to me, the overall talent on this team is going to be lower and potentially significantly lower than 2021 than it was in 2020. And we know USC is a team that sort of relies on its talent and out talents people. And there'll still be some talented guys on this team, but 2021 will not be, I don't think you can count on as much talent that for that season than you did for this one. And like you said, you skipped some opportunities to really, opportunities for great wins, but is that realistic? Was USC going to beat Alabama? They look like the best team we've seen in a long time. And, Notre Dame is a playoff team that beat Clemson this year. The way USC's played, it's hard to imagine winning or even keeping competitive in either one of those games. So, yeah, you have avoided some of that stuff. You didn't have to play Washington. You would have, in the normal season, you would have had to play Oregon on the road, not in the Coliseum for the Pac-12 championship in the normal season. So, yeah, there was a lot of advantages this year. And having less talent and then most likely – a schedule that does include Notre Dame this time. Now you don't have, what did they add? Did they add San Jose State for next year, Keeley? Is that the game?
Yeah. Broke it, Ryan.
Yeah, we broke that, right? I think I did.
It was the podcast with Mike Bone.
Oh, yes. Okay. So it was like, I forget what that was. There was one that was like, I forget where it was. I broke something else that was on there. Like I was on vacation or something. And, got a text or something.
Oh, maybe it was that one. I don't know.
It might have been that. I don't remember what it was, but whatever. So it's San Jose State, who pretty good freaking team, it's not like that could potentially be a losable game, but it's not, Notre Dame playoff team. They're probably going to be good. So yeah, I think it's going to be a tougher schedule. It's going to be a longer schedule. The more games you play, the more opportunities to lose. There are definitely more opportunities to win, but the way USC was living dangerously, they won a bunch of coin flips there and some that were not coin flips and still were able to win them. I mean, that 99.9% chance of losing that game to Arizona State, that's a lot of coins you got to flip to get heads right in a row, to 99.9%. And then USC did it. But you can't live like that. You can't keep drawing to an inside straight and expect it to hit that, hit the magic card all the time. And I think that USC was hitting their magic card a lot. You play a 12-game schedule, it's going to be a lot harder. You got to be better. You have to have a better base, a better foundation that you can just rely on. And some of that foundation is the talent that they have. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be less. So you got to coach better and you got to motivate guys better and you got to play better to go through a more difficult schedule and just more games. You can't have a couple miracles in a row and then be like, oh, the season's over. You're like, it's 5-0. What happened? But yeah, that's what USC's regular season was. And then the one team they played that, actually had similar talent to USC, they end up losing.
Yeah, exactly. It's not very optimistic in that sense. I do think, though, there are different variables that will come into play. How much time will they have in preseason preparation? And what will Keaton Slovis look like in year three? Is it just a sophomore slump and he'll shake out of it? Or is this the regression we've seen from quarterbacks in this era under Clay Helton? We'll see how that looks going forward. I think if you see a freshman year Keaton Slovis rather than a sophomore year Keaton Slovis, then I think you are able to mask some of the inherent flaws that come, in this era under Clay Helton. So I think it definitely, like you said, Ryan, it definitely depends on the talent pool. And some of those are a question mark going into the next season.
Yeah. Sometimes it feels like some of the quarterbacks, the more coaching they get, the less effective they are.
Yeah.
That's sad. Like it's sort of, we've seen that a little bit, but I think Graham Harrell is a good coach. I mean, I don't all agree with a lot of the stuff that they do, but I think they needed some. I think he's a good quarterback coach, and I think they needed a system. And if they have a system, you can say you don't like certain parts of the system. There are certain parts I don't like, but at least it's not a hodgepodge of a bunch of different systems. It's a system that he runs that he likes and he's implemented. Which USC desperately needed that. Could you argue that you need a different system now? Yeah, you probably could, but. Or the system should change a little bit, but I wouldn't say that it was, Graham Harrell's the reason that that Keaton Slovis went downhill. I don't know. Something.
No.
Yeah. I mean, I think I feel stronger about him being the quarterback coach than some of the other guys that they've had.
Yeah. No, I wasn't placing that on Graham Harrell. I just think it was interesting seeing what happened to Sam Darnold from 2016 to 2017. And so I had asked on the Family Feud podcast last week, do we have enough data points at this point to say that, like, under Clay Helton, quarterbacks regress? And so the Chris and Shotgun kind of battled it out a little bit. So I don't know how you land on that one, Ryan.
Yeah, you know, it's like, I don't remember, like, guys getting a lot better when he was the quarterback coach. You know, I mean, that's, he's says he's a, you know, quarterback coach by trade. I didn't see a lot of opportunities that guys just got a lot better when they were under, you know, Clay Helton as the quarterback coach either. So, yeah, I mean, you want to see these guys get better. You know, they're talented guys, and you know, Keaton Slovis can sling it. And you saw, I mean, he was a 3-star guy that looked, you know, amazing last year and set a NCAA record for freshmen and completion percentage. There's some other things that are going on. And the problem is, you could say, well, it's a little bit of this, a little bit of that, a little bit of that. And if there's a lot of little things going on, it still comes back to the head man and what's, you know, what could Clay Helton be doing in practice differently or in meetings or whatever it is to get a better result? Because you have some great material, you know, there's great players there. You're the head coach. Your job is to hire the right people, put them around and put everyone in a better position to make that talent better. If your ceiling is basically where the talent is, then you're not adding anything. Like, you're just basically putting the players out there and letting them do their thing. You have to be able to make this collection of talent better and not the ceiling being, well, as fast as Marquise Stepp can run. That's how where we can go. Not, you know, you got to open up holes for them. You got to be able to, like, put them in a better position to do their jobs. And if your ceiling is where the talent ends, that you're just not adding a lot from the coaching standpoint.
Yeah, no, I agree. Let's go to a text from Jarrett from San Clemente, who says, my sense is that the reputation of USC's run game is at a crisis level with players on the roster and those who are looking for a school to play for over the next few years. As you guys have mentioned, touches, rotation, and involvement are the issues. Making the assumption that Clay is staying and Graham is immune, there should be some movement on the coaching staff. Should they see the running backs coach position as room for improvement? And he also says, PS, fantasy hire Dylan McCullough with a raise and promotion and title as run game coordinator with a little eyeball emoji.
Yeah. I mean, we've seen some assistant coaches come in and players get better. And Dylan McCullough was one of them. And that was the first hire Clay Helton made that wasn't, you know, someone he was super familiar with. He brought in someone from the outside and it just happened to work out brilliantly. And then I forget who the next hire was. And you're like, wow, he's going to go outside again. And it just went right back. You know, you went right back to the well and hire people that you're familiar with already. And to me, you sort of like that proved like, you know, you need a good running back coach. What do? Go find a good running back coach somewhere. Not like, well, we know this guy. Let's bring in. You know, I know Tim Drevno, he can coach running backs. Like, he's an offensive line coach. Why are you having him coach your running back? That didn't make any sense. So yeah, a guy like Dylan McCullough is a great example. I don't know if you're going to be able to try to bring him back. I think he's still with the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah, he is.
If I'm not mistaken, but, it again, changing out the running back coach is not going to fix everything. It's not just when you're talking about, you know, it's a, I think there's more of an issue of how you run the program. And if we got to watch practice and we could tell you, here's how much they're working on the run game, like how that 9-on-7 period, like how long does that go? Is that the only like sort of power running that you're doing? And are you throwing a lot of passes out of those formations and stuff? That's usually like where some of the run game happens. Are they tackling at all? So I feel like if we could watch, we could kind of tell you a little bit more of what's going on. You know, who gets the touches, what the rotation is. I mean, you're saying those are issues. I'm not sure that they are. I think it's more about, it seems like everyone's had problems. That one game, Vavai was the only one that was running well. And we've just seen games where guys are getting touched like right away and they're getting hit in the backfield. And the only way the run works is if the running back makes some amazing play on his own.
Yeah. Well, I'm really curious what the self-scouting looks like this offseason, because in my opinion, I think there needs to be a look at just the scheme. And formation-wise, I just thought it was a little predictable. And if I think it's predictable, I think that's saying something, because I'm not an offensive genius over here. And I also just think, and this is when I wish we could have had like after practice scrums, because you get a better idea about this. But I was really curious just about the rotation, because I do think that mattered. I think it mattered, especially for guys like Marquise Stepp. I think it was the UCLA game. He got to the corner and you could tell he almost made it into the end zone, and he kind of like hit the ball a little bit and looked like he was like, oh, okay, I'm finally warmed up. And that was kind of like a couple touches in. And he's a guy who needs to warm up a little bit, and you can't just like put him in randomly, where USC was kind of doing that. So I think it matters. I do think it does. And I would hope that USC, if you're a USC fan, that they're looking at that and looking at what went wrong in the run game and how to like revitalize that if there's not any coaching changes this offseason.
I think Curtis is, I can play that now. He's really bummed about the run game. So he left a few voicemails, but I'll play you this one and maybe give you some thoughts on some of his other things he said.
Okay.
Hi, Curtis from Moreno Valley. Still pissed off about Marquise Stepp. This is not going to be positive. If you want to fire Clay Helton, it's going to take money. Not paying for a crop duster to fly over to Notre Dame game and embarrass all the kids, or have the cheerleaders cheer that they want Clay Helton gone, or you not buying your season tickets. That had zero effect. They didn't do nothing but build more around them. They need money. How about GoFundMe? Let's start a GoFundMe account and see how much money we can come up with. If we gave them $500 after the GoFundMe was over, they would know that the fans at least are trying to help. Curtis from Moreno Valley.
Curtis. He like completely changed his tune here a little bit.
That's the most like 2020 plot development. Curtis from Moreno Valley has a change in optimism.
Yeah, his other voicemail was a little longer, and he was like, this was the last straw, Marquise Stepp transferring out. That really made him mad. He's again, it reiterated, he wants a run game consultant. I just don't think that's going to work, Curtis. You know, this is Graham Harrell's offense. This isn't the gumbo where you bring in somebody else and like add some more, you know, different ingredients to the stew. Like, you got the chef, he makes a stew. Now, could they do things? Could he? I think it's going to have to be what he controls and how they, you know, impact the run game and make a decision. Is it going to be an important part of it? Because Clay Helton was saying it was when we talked to Graham Harrell about it, and we're like, hey, are you concerned with the run game? Like, Keaton completed 17 straight passes. He's basically like, I don't care. He had an amazing game. Well, if he doesn't have an amazing game and you can't run the ball, there's some issues. So I don't think run game consultant Curtis is all over that one. I don't feel like that's going to be a thing. I don't know. Maybe it will, but it just doesn't, you know. But as far as like, you don't think not buying season tickets has an impact? Yeah, does a plane flying over? I don't know. But it all, those are things that the administration will talk about, you know. Season tickets going down is something that they have to address. Like, that hurts the bottom line. You would rather raise money. That'll show that fans care. That's fine. They're going to have to raise money through boosters and stuff anyway, because you got to buy out this contract at some point. But yeah, if fans decide not to use season tickets, I think it sends a message. Now, anyone, if you get a negative message, you can look at it. They might look at it like, well, that's not about Clay Helton. It's more about the pandemic. So you can send a message that way, and it might not have the desired impact, but I think as fans, that's sort of like what your rights are. If you feel like you're the diehard fan and you just want to, you'll do season tickets no matter what, that's great. If you're a fan that's like upset and you're like, hey, I'm going to cancel my season tickets because they're just not listening to me and they're not listening to the fans, and Clay Helton is not the right coach, I mean, that's your money. You should do what you want. You know, we people on our message board or whatever, if they're mad at something we wrote and they're saying, I'm going to cancel my subscription, I'd rather them stay. But if they want to cancel, like, I can't judge someone for how they're going to spend their discretionary income, especially during this, you know, hard time. So I think you're sending some kind of message, Curtis. So I would put that one in a separate category. I'm not going to be upset for fans if they want to cancel their season tickets. That's your way. That's like a vote for you. That's the way you're voting. And a lot of people have told me, like, hey, we're canceling, but we'll come back when they get a different coach. That's how they're kind of expressing their displeasure. So I'm not going to be judgmental towards those people, Curtis.
Yeah, that's a lot to unpack there.
No,
you're fine. I'm actually going to circle back something you mentioned about the whole Graham Harrell, because he was asked, like, is it a concern that you only netted 5 yards rushing against Washington State? And then that's when he threw out Keaton Slovis's stats. I'm curious if we do see more exits from USC's running backs, if that forces them to kind of go into PR damage control, and if that will force their hand at all, you know, because you barely got Brandon Campbell, the running back signee, in the door, and you're already thin on running back depth. And if you're not making an attractive place for running backs to come to, you're going to have to do something to fix that. And whether or not that's making a change or a scheme change or something, I'm curious if they would try and go into damage control mode. And Mike Jinks isn't Graham Harrell's guy. He was Cliff Kingsbury's guy. They came over kind of together when that whole revamp, air raid revamp, happened. So I wonder if you could kind of make the excuse, if you're USC, like, oh, well, Jinx wasn't Harrell's guy, I'll get someone who knows my specific air raid better. I don't know. But I'm just curious if they have to, if their hand is forced to be more cognizant of the run issues, if your running backs on your own roster are sending you a message in that sense.
100%. I feel like this is going to be free agency coming up with the transfer rules, and you're getting that exemption and be able to play right away. USC is going to have to try to find a left tackle. I think they're going to have to get a running back or two from the transfer portal. But
yeah,
you know, you're saying you're a running back. You're like, I want to go to tailback you. Well, you don't want to go to a place where they're not running the football. So I think it's something that does have to be addressed. I think what we were limited what we got to hear from these coaches, but when the run game came up, there was a lot of questions there. And, you know, Clay Helton's talk about the 170 yards a game, you know, obviously that didn't happen. Graham Harrell sort of poo-pooing the, I'm not concerned that the run game's not working when Keaton Slovis throws 17 straight completions. Do you really want to say that? Like, that's not going to go over well with a running back. I mean, a running back would be like, I mean, you could say something like, we were lucky. We couldn't run the ball. We want to be able to do that. Fortunate, though, that Keaton Slovis was on a tear. And, you know, when he's completing 17 straight passes, that kind of helps us out if the running game isn't there. But we can't always rely on that. It's something along those lines where we're going to double our efforts to make sure the run game is working. You need to do something to kind of appease the potential running backs out there, right? And
yeah,
I don't feel like that answer did that.
Well, the issue is that, you know, we mentioned how the only thing we've really heard from Clay Helton was on Trojans Live, which is like a in-house radio program. When your own in-house radio program is asking the head coach, is the run game important to the offense? That's not a great, like, marketing tool for running backs that you want to come to the university. So, and Clay Helton said, it's important. We need it when quarterbacks have an off day. You need to have a functioning run game. So that even the fact that Helton and Harrell are kind of a little bit at odds with their answer about the run game, it's just not a good look, and that's why I'm very curious how they will address it this offseason, especially if you see roster changes. So it's important, obviously, and whether or not they fully come to terms with that, I don't know, or at least publicly come to terms with that.
Yeah, and that probably won't happen until signing day, like we said. So we'll try. We'll try to get, you know, I'll try to get Clay Helton to come on, like, Tunnel Vision or something, but I don't think they're going to allow that. But we'll see. We'll do our best.
Speaking of getting people on our show, we got a text from Chuck who said, stop making or looking for excuses. Clay Helton is mediocre. He might be a good Division II or III coach, but this is USC. And then he goes in all caps, need to clean house totally. We need discipline, so much individuality. Need to get the president or AD on your show to answer questions. The fans deserve better. Multiple exclamation points. Chuck from Beaverton, Oregon.
Hey, Chuck. Yeah, we've had those guys on from the athletic department, which is great. Like, that's something that fairly new, that they would actually come on and talk with us. It'll be a long off season. We'll try again and see what we can do. I'm not sure if they're going to come on this time, but it was great that they did already, and we'll try again. I feel like by the time we got Mike Bone on, the sort of thought was, hey, we have Clay Helton, we're moving forward. Like they weren't really answering any more questions about why they weren't going to fire him. I'm guessing that's going to be the same thing this time. So we could get him on, but he's going to be talking about what they're going to do to make the program better with Clay Helton. They're not going to talk about Urban Meyer or Luke Fickell or things like that. Like they're, you know, the decision will have been made, like Clay Helton's coming back. So his focus is going to be on making everything better. But that was his focus last year. And you can like, and so he could say, well, they won the division. They won the Pac-12 South. I think they made actual t-shirts that say that, which is embarrassing for USC. Like that has to be a joke, but someone put a link to that. Like you could get them in the bookstore, Pac-12 South champions or something.
So,
like
USC,
if that's real. Is that real?
USC itself did not make them, but Fanatics did. And USC doesn't really have control over what Fanatics makes. So gotcha. I looked into that because I was like, this is ridiculous.
Yeah. Okay, good. Like that makes a lot more sense. If some company's going to make that crap because they're just trying to sell shirts, like that's fine. It's not like USC. You can't get that in the USC bookstore or anything. So that's good. Yeah. So kudos to USC for not doing that. Well, just not screwing up. Like just you did the right thing by not, you know, celebrating that. So if we're able to get Mike Bone on this offseason, I think the focus is definitely going to be on the future. And we've established that Clay Helton is the head coach and you're going to try to make things better. The issue being that's what he said last year. And could you say, well, you won the Pac-12 South, you're this close to winning all these games, but you're also this close to losing all those games too. And it could have easily been a sub 500 team. So it will be interesting to hear what he has to say, because they did put a lot of resources into making the football program better. And at this point, you know, you could say, well, they're 5-1. Do you think that's better? It didn't look better to me. And I, you know, that's for Mike Bone to decide, but we will try. But thanks for the suggestion. We will definitely try to get those guys on. And it was great they came on last year. We'll hope they'll come on again.
The problem is that your athletic director isn't the guy who, at least in USC's history, is usually realistic. The AD is going to be like positive and see the positive spin. It would be weird if the AD fully came out when there's still time and money left on Helton's deal and like trashes his head coach. He's not going to do that. You know what I mean? So it's a weird tightrope you have to walk if you're AD, yeah, especially Mike Bone. So
right. And if you know he's coming back, you're trying to sell that to the fan base, and he knows it's
You're not going to.
Yeah. It's an impossible sell. Like it's not.
Yeah.
If it's like some fan that's not really paying attention, and you can like a big booster that's just like just loves the program, you're like, oh, so how's Clay doing? Oh, good. Yeah, we're 5-1. All right. And then you can give them the pat on the back and talk about all the positives, but you're not spinning it for the diehard fans that are following this. You know, they know what's going on.
Yeah.
And they're not going to be convinced. You know, there's nothing Mike Bone's going to say that's going to make those fans believe that Clay Helton is the right man for the job. I don't know what could do that at this point besides like, you know, winning a national championship, or I don't even think making the playoffs is going to, because people come up with excuses why USC lucked out to make the playoffs or something. But if you actually won a championship, I think people could change their tune. But short of that, Keely, I don't know if they will.
USC fans?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, but then there was like college football playoff talk this season and people were like kind of intrigued. And I think that's why the 5-1 was such a letdown for fans, because there was some excitement this season. They at least made it interesting, even though sometimes USC fans were pulling their hair out while watching games. So I think I don't know. I just don't know where the line is where people are rooting so much for Clay Helton to fail so that he will get fired. That if there is success, like where do you outweigh the wanting him to move on rather than the ultimate goal is USC being successful? You know what I mean? I don't know how that weighs out in USC fans. And I don't know if a championship would solve that, because they would still be like, but he's still the coach. You know, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I think the problem is the longevity of the hatred or the, you know, the displeasure. Maybe hatred's too strong a word, not for some of the fans, but I would say in general, displeasure is probably a good word. It happened with Pete Carroll, but it was a much shorter, you know, what's it, not the honeymoon period, but the, you know, it was like the bad period, the beginning. And then Pete Carroll turned things around. And the fans didn't have, you know, if you were like, I hate Pete Carroll, it's a terrible hire. See, he went 6-6 and they lost the Utah and the Las Vegas Bowl. It didn't take long for you to be like, you know, the beginning of the next year, oh, you lost to, like, I think it was Kansas State and maybe Washington State or something. USC loses early and then wins the rest of their games and wins the Orange Bowl. So you could have hated Pete Carroll for like a season, and that's easier to get over, right? Like, you can like, oh, they just won the Orange Bowl. Like, they look good. Like, holy cow, won the Heisman. You could turn that around pretty quickly, I think. This one is like deep, you know, this is down deep in your guts. Like, there's like, it would be really hard to change some of these people's minds. So anything short of like a national championship, maybe two, like if he wins back to back championships, we'll be like, okay, Clay Helton's great. I don't know anything short of that that people would say he was great. Or even if they would then, I don't know.
Yeah, there's too much to unpack there. Because if you want to get like, Pete Carroll came after Hackett, you could argue that Helton's tenure is harder because he's following what Carroll set up. You know what I mean? Like, it's a complicated subject, and I don't know. I don't know if we can fully answer it. And on that note, I think we need to go into rapid fire mode because we still have more questions to get into. We have a text from Charlie from Carson who says Drake Jackson needs to be back on as an edge rusher. He was not nearly as explosive in this new position as he was last year. Looking at Kayvon Thibodeau, that's how Drake used to be. Slovis looked like a deer in the headlights. Watching other QBs rally their troops verbally, encouraging their teammates. I don't see that from Slovis. He's just quiet. You don't see him speaking to the O-line encouraging. He just stands there with a blank stare. Last but not least, stars matter. We continue to get three-star linemen who get dominated by four- and five-star defensive linemen. Why can't we recruit offensive linemen? We also got a text about that, too, so I'm merging these questions. Why don't we recruit mobile QBs? Slovis is not athletic enough to make real difference by scrambling. He never runs to get yards, and our offense is one-dimensional. So a laundry list of complaints from Charlie there.
Charlie, lots of stuff there. Yeah, I mean, USC's recruited linemen. I think they've done a pretty good job on offensive defensive line. It's kind of fallen off a little bit more recently. But seeing a guy like Tuli Polotu contribute right away as a three-star guy, I think that's encouraging. We're going to have to see where the offensive linemen go from here. But the offensive line is performing well with four- and five-star guys. So, yeah, are you going to expect a lot more from three-star dudes? I don't know. It's hard to say. As far as one-dimensional, yeah, that comes up a lot. The kind of running plays that they're doing, it's way more effective in my mind when you have a mobile quarterback. They seem to be very averse to that. So I think that hurts the run game as well, something we didn't mention. And, you know, for Drake Jackson, yeah, I think Shotgun said he didn't drop back as much, but when he did, he sort of was exposed. They went after him a little bit. Yeah, his best asset is going and getting after the quarterback, and you got him to do that. You know, Kayvon Thibodeau looked amazing in that game, and you want Drake Jackson to have that kind of impact.
Yeah, and I think the comments about Keaton Slovis were just completely unfair to Slovis. That was a guy who, as a backup, who got thrust into the starting position as a true freshman, came to a veteran offensive line during one of the games and basically said, we're not losing. We're not letting the ball drop. Like, he was super fired up on the sideline. He's a guy, you don't have comeback wins if you don't believe in what your quarterback can do to a certain extent, you know? And so he's been a guy who, when I've been on the sidelines and watching him, he's fired up guys. He also has to talk to Harold in the booth, so he can't always be the rah-rah guy. But he's not dead on the sidelines. That's unfair to say. So
yeah, for sure.
Back to the offensive line. Just like I said, they wanted to know why three-star linemen don't work out. If they have the right build, can you still build it? If that makes sense, that's what they asked.
I mean, you can't generalize and just say this is a three-star lineman and that's a four-star lineman. And like, there's three-star linemen that are, you know, 6'4" and 265 pounds. There's like the Chad Wheelers of the world that get a lot bigger and they develop. I mean, it's a development position, and it's great if you're a five-star lineman and you start off and you look the part and you're great feet and your hips move and all that stuff. But you still got to get better in college. You know, like a Chuma Adoga was a five-star guy coming in. Just, you know, what did he perform at USC? It wasn't great. Well, he's in the NFL now, you know, and is he getting developed there? It seems like it more than what was happening at USC. So I don't think you can just say, well, three-star lineman, you do this for it's a developmental position. Like, usually you aren't freshman starting right away. You're a five-star receiver. You come in, you look awesome. And that's just the way it is. You have to, these linemen have to take steps to get to be productive college players. And that's where I think USC has been lacking.
Mm-hmm. We have a email from John in Oakland, who said, for some reason, USC's loss in the Pac-12 championship game feels more depressing than usual. It feels like a turning point in solidifying Oregon as the top football and maybe athletic program in the Pac-12 and destination choice for top-tier recruits now and in the future. And then basically just summarizing the rest that he said, do you have any sense if Mike Bone understands what's wrong and would have the courage to fire Helton in the next few weeks and bring in Luke Fickell, someone Bone knows very well, or Matt Campbell? Do you think either of these two hires would hold the 2021 recruiting class together and or energize the USC fan base? Is there any hope for USC football? He asks. Fight on, John.
No, I mean, either one of those guys, I think. But first of all, I don't think you have to hold the recruiting class together because it's mostly already signed. But yeah, those like just firing Clay Helton would energize the fan base. For sure. And those two guys would be great hires, I think. You don't know, but I feel like that. But that's not happening, like we talked about. But as far as, like, the more depressing than usual, it was, I think, for a lot of fans. It was the expectations, the talk about, you know, pipe dream of a college football playoff and stuff. That just wasn't going to happen. We said it's not going to happen, but ESPN still put out numbers that said, you know. But there was – USC was actually – somewhat nationally relevant, which it hadn't been for a while. Winning that Rose Bowl was something, but you know, you start off 1-3, you're still a three loss team. Winning the Pac-12 championship was something, you still lost three games that year. This was an undefeated team, even though it was 5-0 and they, you know, all the comebacks and all that stuff, there were still no blemishes. There were, I don't know what you want to call them, but those comeback wins, you know, they weren't always pretty. There were some pimples and stuff, I guess. So I guess there was blemishes, but not an actual, you know, full-on outbreak where you lost a game. They actually won all of those games, and that's something that you could actually feel pretty good about. You know, I thought I told people to feel good about beating UCLA just because it's UCLA. If you lose all the rest of your games, at least you beat UCLA. That's something you can hang your hat on. But yeah, it felt worse because all those little problems that were popping up during the season that didn't really impact you as much because you didn't lose a game, all that kind of went away once you lost to a 3-2 Oregon team that just, you know, off a 2-game losing streak. They lost to Cal. They lost to Oregon State. That did not feel good. And I feel it was for a 5-1 team that like was close to winning the Pac-12 championship. It felt like a 1-5 team after that, if that makes sense, Keely.
Yeah, it kind of just burst the bubble of the kind of false reality USC was living in for a little bit, that the mistakes that they didn't correct didn't really matter or didn't really hurt them, because ultimately they did against Oregon. So it kind of burst the bubble of like, right, these are the deficiencies under Clay Helton, and we're still here, and USC is still having him as a head coach. So I think that's, from a USC fan's perspective, that's why they were so just disappointed, because it kind of burst the bubble of like what the season could have been if you looked with like rose-colored glasses a little bit. So it was a reality check in that sense.
The reality check is true. Like, it's like the Wizard of Oz, and you're like the Tin Man. You're hoping that the wizard's going to give you like a heart, and you know, this is Grand Wizard and all this fire, you know, all the tech pyrotechnics and stuff, and then you pull back the curtain, it's this little man, and it's like, oh, it's like, this is the reality. Like, you thought this was like, oh, it's 5-0, this team is gonna like do great things, and then all of a sudden you find out no, it's nowhere near what you thought it was.
I'm moving on because we have an email from Dan, class of 1962. He gets, it's a little sad, his PS, so we'll get to that. He says, hi, Keely and Ryan. USC will never improve with Clay Helton as head coach. That is a fact that has been borne out over the 6 years that he has been here. Pat Hayden and Lynn Swann literally destroyed our football program while being enabled by a terrible president in Max Nikias. If USC has to dig into the endowment fund to pay off Helton and hire Urban Meyer, so be it. It takes money, spend wisely to make money. A winning team that makes alums and fans proud of USC would replenish the endowment fund 10 times over. If President Folt is unable to accomplish this need, then the onus is on the Board of Trustees, all 56 of them. Money should never be a problem at USC. Maybe we should sue Lynn Swan for his lack of fiduciary oversight when he extended Helton's contract. Fight on and please win sometime in the future, Dan Class of 1962. And then he says, P.S. I don't have many years left on this mortal earth, and I would at least like to see one playoff appearance, especially since I'm going to believe what Ryan says about ESPN wanting a strong USC in the playoffs.
Oh, Dan.
I know. So sorry, sad. Dan.
We hope you have many more years listening to the podcast and being on this earth. And we hope you get to see many playoff USC teams. I'm hopeful. But it's funny you said money should never be an issue. Let's sue Lynn Swan, you know. money is an issue. Like, the endowment is not used to pay off football coaches. Like, I don't understand, like, the I'm not an accountant. I don't do all the books for what USC is doing. But my understanding is, you don't just say, well, because USC raised $7 billion in that, you know, whatever fund that they were doing, that you can use some of that to pay for other football coaches. Like, I just don't think that's the way it works.
And yeah, this came up when, like, there was a lot of talk about athletic departments taking hit, which is COVID in general. And a lot of people were like, especially when Stanford had to cut sports, they were like, what about Stanford's endowment? Endowments are very specifically, like, the money has to be used in very specific ways. And it's not just this bank that you can, like, dip into and use at your discretion. There's a lot of things that are specifically, like, earmarked that you can't really change. So that's just a endowment PSA.
Yeah, and what was it called? I forget. There was a podcast, Freakonomics. I used to listen to it sometimes, and they talked about endowments. And, like, Harvard's is the biggest, I believe. Like, Stanford's is up there too, but it's like $60 billion or some, you know, whatever. And it's basically like this enormous hedge fund, and there's people that manage the money. The money's not sitting under a mattress. It's not like you have $60 billion or whatever it is sitting in a bank. It's invested, you know, it's in all these different stocks and stuff. And apparently, like, the people that would run, you know, they would charge, you know, Harvard money to run, you know, to invest all this money. And they did, I guess they've done, like, a horrible job. Like, if you just put it into the stock market, just the index fund, it would have done way better than them managing the hell out of it and not, you know, and just and losing money. So, yeah, I mean, these are enormous sums of money. And they're invested and worked on, but they can only be used for certain things. So, but yeah, I think from what I've listened to on that podcast, it's some of those are handled very poorly. So they could be growing those endowments more than they have.
Yeah. And as far as the whole Nikias thing, he at least tried to pay attention to football. I feel like he just didn't fully understand the whole dynamic of everything. I don't know what your read was on him, Ryan, but he at least, like, he watched Instant Analysis, and, like, Dan would talk to Nikias. So he at least tried to understand the importance of USC to the university. But that's not a statement on anyone else. I'm just talking specifically about Nikias.
Right. He definitely would talk to Dan on this, you know, go to practice, ask Dan what was going on. He had Dan, like, audit one of his classes or something.
Yeah.
He was definitely involved in that kind of stuff. It just seemed, you know, looking back now, you know, having that $6 billion, you know, fundraising target was interesting, but it just seemed like the whole focus of the university was making money, and they overlooked a lot of things that were going on, because the most important thing was to make money. And I think, you know, when he announced that they were going to have a search firm to hire an athletic director, and you go get Lynn Swan, and you're like, you literally, like, there's no search firm in the world that would say Lynn Swan's the best guy for the job. Like, no way.
Yeah.
It was more about, well, he's a beloved football player that will call all the, you know, boosters, and they'll remember the glory days, and they'll give money to the, like, that's basically why he was hired. And the ironic thing is, he was terrible at that. Like, he's just not good at that kind of stuff. He would have rather go out and play golf. So he was not a good fundraiser, and obviously was a terrible athletic director. So the reason you hired this guy, he wasn't even good at that. And it was a terrible reason to hire an athletic director, and you were wrong about it. He was just bad at it too.
Yeah. So yeah. Everyone knows where we stand on this. It's it's not a secret. But keeping on, Junior from Moreno Valley, he must have gotten a bat signal that Curtis was pessimistic because someone from Moreno Valley needs to be optimistic, and Junior is definitely bringing it for this podcast. He titled his email to all pessimistic USC fans. He says, "Hello, Trojans. After listening to all you so-called fans after the Peristyle podcast mailbag extravaganza, I can't believe you fans. If they had won the Pac-12, you'd be the number one fan, but after a loss, you leave them behind. We all know that it can be a matter of time before our rich tradition in football returns. We will get a new coach and things will change. When that happens, don't cheer for USC as you once left them behind. You gear up and play three games in 14 days, one game on a Sunday, then following the ruined Bruins with a win, mind you, then playing on a Friday. We could have used that extra day, Pac-12, and play on Saturday, so thanks for that." I think he's blaming the Pac-12. Sorry, I didn't pre-read this one. "Give credit to Oregon after 2 weeks off, mind you. Anyway, in football, there are rematches, USC versus everyone, as it has been since the beginning. In all caps, he says, wake up, fans, and be behind our boys. Fight on, and UCLA sucks forever. Junior from Moreno Valley."
Thanks, Junior. I don't think there's a question in there, but I like your rant. I don't think the issue I have with that, though, is if USC won the Pac-12, most of those fans that are really pissed off now wouldn't even be that happy. Like, it just, there was sort of like the expected, like, you know, it's the expected result. Like, you're not going to cheer, you know, you're in prison and you're handed a lunch of, like, you know, bread and water. You're not going to be like, yeah, I got lunch, this is awesome. You're just like, yeah, that's kind of expected. USC was going to get like bread and water by winning the Pac-12 in a lot of USC fans' minds, and they didn't even get that. They got nothing. So it was way worse to get, you know, but they weren't going to do backflips for winning the Pac-12 in this kind of year when you didn't play the best team from the North or the best team from the South, even if you had to play three games in 13 days.
Yeah. What an analogy, Ryan.
You like that one? I don't know.
Prison.
Just made that up. Prison food. Yeah.
Wow. It's a weird one. Our final email comes from Brett C. from Knoxville, Tennessee. And he says, "Hey, Ryan, Keeley, and the whole Peristyle podcast team. My question for all of you guys is that, is there any possibility that USC will be getting a much better Nike contract deal, or are they looking for other companies? Love to hear your guys' thoughts, especially with the new athletic department administration. Keep up the great work. Love the show. Plus, Chris Trevino makes me laugh as well. Thanks, and fight on to victory, Brett C." Brett, I texted that to Chris, and he's very happy, and he says thank you. So there you go.
Yeah. Thanks for the email, Brett, in Knoxville. Yeah, it was a bad deal. And from what I understand, is Nike's not as big on – they're big on product and less big on giving a ton of cash. I think the deal that they did, the Jordan deal that they did with UCLA – is more about product and marketing than it is about cash. And I think USC probably wants to try to get some cash in there. Now, UCLA signed the best deal ever with Under Armour, but, you know, it was very lopsided and Under Armour figured that out and they had to, you know, drop out of it. But I think Nike's had a good deal with USC for a while. It's worked out well for, you know, I think it's better for Nike than it is for USC from my understanding. I think they'll try to use the market. They'll use what they can to get a better deal. And so I think they'll have to look around when it's up. But I don't even know when that one's up. But it was one that was way too long. It just wasn't as lucrative as it could have been.
I think the thing that should be exciting for USC fans is, and I think you get the sense too, Ryan, is that this new administration at least understands things a little bit better and understands like where they are in the market and what the type of power the USC brand wields. So I think they'll be much more aware and are more open to looking at other avenues and things like that. So it will be better just in the sense that I think they're more aware than those who made that initial Nike deal.
Yeah. There's not going to just be like, oh, Nike, you give us this, fine. Yeah. Like they will look into things and they will try to get the best deal possible. So I feel pretty confident. That's a good point, Keely.
Yeah. That's it, Ryan, for the show.
Wow. Okay. Well,
we did it.
Good stuff. We did another mailbag extravaganza pretty much. So
pretty much. Yeah.
With little newsy stuff in the beginning. So, thanks everybody for tuning in. Thanks, Keely, for getting through all those questions. There was a lot of them there. And, but we appreciate everyone sending them in. We'll try to get Harvey Hyde next week back, and then we'll do a show as well. Yeah, we'll get back to doing probably once a week Tunnel Vision shows too. So we'll get all that stuff kind of back rolling here in the new year. But that's Keely Orr. I'm Ryan Abraham. Thanks for tuning in to the Peristyle Podcast, and we will talk to you next time.
You may have noticed that shopping at Trader Joe's is unlike shopping at other markets. People ask us all the time how we manage to have such unique, interesting, and delicious products at such great everyday prices. This is Dan Bain of Trader Joe's. The answer is simple. It's all in the way we do business. We buy directly from the manufacturer whenever possible. This helps to keep our costs low, and we pass those savings on to you. No gimmicks, just great values at honest prices every day at Trader Joe's. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. Don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your smartphone or tablet for free. Just click the iTunes link on peristylepodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.
On May 23rd...
I want to go back to normal.
What's normal?
The Paramount Plus original series, Evil, returns.
We've already hunted werewolves and demons.
And now what? A baby antichrist?
Okie dokie.
Prepare yourself.
You will not beat us.
For the end.
I have visions of hell.
Make it stop. Make it shut up.
You're not going to survive this.
Evil, the final season. Streaming May 23rd, only on Paramount Plus.